And now, Forward with Falk. Join Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen as they navigate their way through the political thicket. Well, Dave, we really are at the end of Biden's administration. Trump is the president. Biden, the Congress is closed. There's no more activity in the Biden administration. There's a day left as we record this. Biden made a speech in which he tried to sum up what he had accomplished and what he sees the future being like. What'd you make of that speech?
I thought that the important part of that speech did not get the emphasis that it needed to get. It was in one way, the way I saw it, Eisenhower-esque. Eisenhower, in his final speech, talked about the military-industrial complex and warned about what would happen if they were able to and continued to be unchecked in their influence. And Biden came out and he talked about the techno-industrial complex and oligarchy, which a lot of people have been warning about or talking about in throughout the campaign, things about the 2025 project and what have you. But actually, what we've been seeing is it's hard to define, because we've been seeing multiple concepts of political organization. Oligarchy, which, as our listeners know, is the rule by a few. We've got the plutocracy, which is ruled mostly by the wealthy. We've got the kleptocracy, which is what we see in Russia, ruled by the thieves. And we've got
cactus. Well, we're going to have that in Washington. We had it in Washington. We're about to get it again in Washington.
Going to get it again. And we have cactocracy, which is ruled by those least qualified to do it. And the Trump administration coming in is a combination of all of those things. We may have to come up with a new term of this.
But I think there's one thing you have to emphasize also. All of these forms of rule by these groups are always directed toward their own enrichment. That's the point of their rule. The plutocracy is rule by that group for their benefit. The autocracy is ruled by an even smaller group for its benefit, and so on.
Yeah.
And that's the point of the danger of the military-industrial complex and the techno-industrial complex, because it's rule for their interest and for nobody else's interest.
Yeah, it's very narrow. It's not a nation or a government for all the people, but only for a self defined and self-limiting and self-serving some of the people.
Exactly. Now, the thing about the speech, and I'm not sure that the Democrats, the active Democrats who heard that speech, actually believe it. I can tell you that the executive committee of the county party that I sat in on couldn't have disbelieved it more. It was irrelevant to them. Not that that Biden was irrelevant, not that him making a speech was irrelevant, but the message that he made was irrelevant. They just didn't believe it. They really don't think there's a big difference between what Democrats tried to achieve under Biden and what Trump is going to try to achieve, and they really don't think there's any danger. For all that he really sincerely warned Biden about the fascist danger, the unconstitutional menace of the MAGA movement, it doesn't seem to have penetrated the people who run the Democratic Party in my locality. I haven't the slightest idea how it is elsewhere, but I really don't see why it would be different.
Well, don't forget, your locality is a rural locality.
Yeah, but
with older people who really don't have much of a vision beyond the New York Pennsylvania border.
They don't get to New York.
Yeah, that's what I mean. They don't. Yeah.
Well, how about Fetterman? Now, Fetterman's a young man, relatively speaking, right? In politics, yeah. He's a young man. He is a sponsor. He sponsored the Lakin bill.
Yeah, the Lakin Riley bill.
Lakin Riley bill. He sponsored it together with Kathy Britt. And his point is, I represent the MAGA just as much as I represent anybody else. Well, that's not true. He wasn't elected to represent MAGA. He was elected to govern, using his best judgment as to what is the right thing to do. That's the whole argument for representative government. That you're
representative. That's the definition of representative.
That's the definition of representative government. That's exactly right. He just turned it on its head. And I think that what he said, a lot of Democratic officials believe, or at least they say it, at least they're going to try to cozy up to the MAGA types, or in any case, the Republicans in power now. And the fact is that completely disorients people who are Democrats everywhere, not just in my benighted part of the universe. I can't imagine that it won't. I mean, there are people in New York City, bastion of liberalism, who are going to say the same thing. Ruben Gallego, who just got elected senator in Arizona, he co-sponsored the same bill with Fetterman. So there's an enormous intellectual disconnect within the Democratic Party. And Biden's speech didn't disabuse them of their idea. They didn't take it in. They didn't agree with it.
Well, I think we have to see where Fetterman and Gallego go from here. This is just one bill. It's important, but it's not the most important bill. There are other things that are going to come out that are more important.
That's true. I'm just pointing to it as a harbinger, an omen.
Right. Yeah.
Now an attitude. It's an attitude.
Yeah. The thing is, Fetterman is trying to position himself. I don't know exactly what for, but we'll see. Just lost my train of thought there for a second there. The thing is, we didn't see Fetterman in any of the committees that were interviewing the Trump cabinet picks. We didn't have anything from him on that. We did have...
By the way, he also didn't show up to vote for the bill. He sponsored it, but he didn't vote for it.
Which is kind of weird.
It is weird, right.
But we did have the Democrats, and some of what they were doing, I think, still shows that they don't fully get it on these things. We had the Pete Hegseth hearing on Secretary of Defense. And first of all, to schedule it only for a few hours, to have each senator only have 10 minutes.
No, 7 minutes. 7 minutes. Yeah,
seven minutes. And an important post like that is a travesty.
Plus, they weren't allowed to see
follow-ups.
They weren't allowed to see the vetting by the FBI. They weren't allowed to read the FBI report. Right. At least the Democrats weren't.
Yeah, only the committee chair was allowed to see it.
Yeah.
Or the committee.
The ranking member could see it.
Ranking member, yeah.
Yeah.
But that in itself was an outrage on things. No follow-ups, and they were going after, I think, the wrong things. They were going after the shiny objects about women in combat, They really needed, I think, to go about this guy's competence in running an organization, in bringing out how he's failed two different veterans groups, and his attitude towards what you've talked about, the way modern warfare is fought and prepared for, rather than this macho thing. But the macho thing, I thought, was prevalent and somewhat disappointing throughout the whole bunch of committee interviews this week. The Republican or the nominees took the attitude that we're going to be belligerent, that we're not going to answer questions, we're going to attack the Democrats, even though I don't think it was necessary. But they wouldn't give an inch on anything, and that does not bode well. And I think the Democrats needed to, they did on the Treasury Secretary. I think they brought out a number of things there that he wouldn't be for the raising of the minimum wage, and that.
But that wasn't the Democrats. That was Bernie.
Well, it was Bernie. Yeah,
it was Bernie.
Yeah. Also, that he wouldn't give an inch on any raising of taxes. It was pure trickle-down type of economics. And no one would have stood up there and pointed out how trickle-down has never worked. It's always failed.
And a complete lie about tariffs. Because his justification for not raising taxes was really a made-up fairy tale about how tariffs work. He claims that tariffs... I'm not going to get into what he claims, but his point is that the tariffs actually make prices cheaper for the people who pay the tariff, whereas the experience of the Trump tariffs, let alone all other tariffs, has been that for every dollar of tariff the government imposed, prices went up a dollar. They didn't go down.
Sure.
But this guy said just the opposite.
It's like the new math, right? The new economics.
Yeah, 1 + 1 = 0.
That's it. Exactly yeah. On that. Pam Bondi kind of surprised me. And it's the same old line. She was asked about the 2020 election and, gave the same evasive answer and belligerent answer. Well, Joe Biden's the president. Well, did he win? I saw things in Pennsylvania. Well, no one asked her, well, what kind of things did you see? Because the courts had 60 cases where they could brought everything and there was nothing to see.
That's right.
But
she also said she wouldn't have an enemies list. That's not possible. But she will go after those people in the government who persecuted Trump.
Prosecute the prosecutors.
Yeah.
And she actually wound up saying more about Kash Patel than herself at times. That's the one that I think is the most dangerous.
And that's only because we haven't had Robert Kennedy yet.
Well, Kennedy's dangerous in a different way.
Well, he'll kill you.
Kash Patel is dangerous because it's fascistic in what he wants to do. Kennedy is dangerous because he's going after the health and welfare of the American people.
Yeah.
You
saw the story that came out that at the height of the inoculations, he was trying to ban the approval, get them the vaccine's approval rescinded.
Right.
Hundreds and hundreds of thousands of lives were saved. Almost a million lives were saved by the vaccine. He's trying to get it rescinded because he said it's too dangerous.
Right. And I mean, that's the sophistry that he engages in. He says, well, the people that took the vaccine were dying at a higher rate. They're going to have worse health outcomes in the future. Things that are never been shown to be and are unprovable, he asserts as fact. He did the same thing on other matters as well. Not just the vaccine, but I forget oh, yeah, the polio vaccine, you know, asserting that that's killed more people.
Yeah, he said the polio vaccine killed more people than it's helped.
Right.
By
nonsense. And then he said, and then when they back him into a corner, he says, well, I support vaccines as long as they're provably safe. But he sets up such standards for provability that no vaccine can match that.
That's exactly right. Nobody says vaccines are 100%. They don't have to be 100%.
Or that they don't have
side effects. Yeah. Or could have side effects.
Yeah, but everything that you put into your body could have side effects.
That's right.
You drink a Coca-Cola and your blood sugar goes up. That's a side effect.
That's right.
I had a COVID shot, an updated booster this week. So my arm, you know, around the site got red. I've had previous vaccines where I've had the next day a low-grade fever. But
well, this argument is no different than the justification for example, banning TikTok on the grounds that it conceivably could be used to collect information about kids. Not evidence that it is being used, but that it could be used. But there's nothing in this world that couldn't be used badly and for evil purposes. You put salt on your food to make it taste better. You put too much salt on your food, you'll kill yourself. Should you ban salt?
Well, that's the kind of thing. But, I mean, he makes the perfect the enemy of the good.
That's right. But not even the perfect.
Yeah. No. Because he knows that not everything, there's no such thing as perfect when you're dealing with
right. That's right. This is a world of probabilities. This is not a world of black and white certainty. Not because we want it that way, but because that's the world. That is reality.
That is the way it is.
Yeah, that is the way it is. That's right.
Yeah. So meanwhile, we, you know, need to say, well, where, you know, what are the Democrats going to be doing over these next few years? And how are they going to get there? And they still don't have a strategy. They haven't elected a party chairperson at this point. I don't know. It seems like the leanings are towards the party chair from Minnesota.
No, I think the guy that from Wisconsin, Winkler. Winkler.
Yeah, those are the two that I think are you're hearing it now. They're talking, and Martin O'Malley, the former governor of Maryland, who, you know, every time I see him, all I think of is this is a slick politician who's looking for a job.
Yeah,
they are starting to talk about restoring that Howard Dean 50 state strategy, which was abandoned by the Obama people back in 2009. You know, they've lost 15 years.
Wait a minute. They haven't restored it yet.
No.
They're into their 16th year.
16th year. Yeah. They're still, you know, stuck on top down rather than bottom up.
How about it? Maybe the Democratic Party as constituted is incapable of opposing the Republican party as it's currently constituted. Maybe they're just not going to be able to do it. Some new formation is going to have to be created. Well, it's happened in American history before.
Yeah. You have a party of norms versus a party of abnormality.
Yeah.
That can't be treated as norms.
You know, if Biden is right, that these guys are neo-fascists and that they want to destroy the Constitution, if you're not prepared to fight, if you think there's some way of working across the aisle with that, you're not competent to lead the American people. You shouldn't be in the running because you've already given up. Some other group has to be there. That's what it amounts to. That's if Biden is right.
Well,
I haven't heard any of the Democrats say he's wrong.
You know, but now politics has a way of changing over time. I mean, there was a time when Obama was elected that they were talking about the Republican Party being in crisis and going away.
Well, it did go away. It was in crisis, and it did go away. This party is different.
Yeah, this is not the Whigs morphing into the Republicans in the 1850s.
No, this was a purge. This was a thorough purge that took 8 years, and it's a different organization with the same name.
Yeah. Actually, it's a purge that's been ongoing since Goldwater in 64, exacerbated by the Reagan years, but there were still enough people in the party to, as I said, use norms. This party has abandoned all norms. That it's
no, they've only abandoned all the old norms. They've got norms. They're fascist norms.
Yeah, well, whatever you can get away with is their
right. That's right.
Is their idea.
Or as they would put it, whatever it takes to win.
Yeah. And there's no shame, no self-reflection. It's
well, they embrace racism. That's important. Don't forget, up until then, racism was something to be ashamed of, at least in the last 40, 50 years, at least since the World War II, since the desegregation of the American army. These people, Make America Great Again, want to return to the period where racism is something to embrace. It's the white European that's being discriminated against, not the people from all other continents, not people who are not Christian, Protestant Christians, not even, and so forth.
Which of the Republican political advisors wrote that book? Is it Stuart Stevens about It Was All a Lie? Rick Wilson, that he thought that racism was the recessive gene in the Republican Party, and he didn't realize that, in fact, it's the dominant gene in the party. And it surfaced from time to time, and, Pat Buchanan getting Ronald Reagan to go to Philadelphia, Mississippi,
right,
to give a speech, and George H.W. Bush using that infamous commercial, the revolving door of, I forget the name of the guy that was left out on a pardon. It took Donald Trump to essentially say the quiet part out loud.
That's right.
And he's been saying it for a long time. When he attacked the Central Park Five, that kind of thing.
And shithole countries.
Yes. Nobody in the party took him on that.
No, because they agree with him. They agreed with him.
Or if they didn't agree with him, they saw that the movement that he was fronting for would tolerate it. And they didn't want to fight that movement.
And so, once you tolerate it, a day later, you support it. Yeah. And the day after that, you promote it. That's the way it works.
Yeah, the slippery slope.
Yep.
Now, meanwhile, there have been, articles about how you go about and communication type of things. And the Democrats are way behind on that. Again, now they don't have what the public has or where the public goes for information sources anymore. They've been pretty well decimated. There was an article in the New York Times this week about that the Democrats have lost the war of attention, that no one pays attention to them. I'm going to be writing an article, I think, for the Trial Lawyers about communication and messaging and that stuff.
You would think the Trial Lawyers would know about this kind of thing. What kind of reception do you get?
It's really funny because in practice, the trial lawyers are very good in front of a jury. and communicating and getting things done. But they don't seem to be able to take it out of the courtroom. They think that the whole thing in the outside of the courtroom is not a communications thing. They think it's a lobbying thing. They've been the other side keeps trying to limit people's rights, and they keep fighting on that level, but it prevents them from fighting. I say that we've got to be able to walk and chew gum at the same time.
Well, basically, and they're against politics. Basically, they're against the democratic politics. They're against empowering people. Lobbying is not empowering people. Lobbying is backroom dealing.
Yeah, exactly. And I keep using the term, you've got to win the hearts and minds of people. And they only feel that they only have to win over the minds and the pocketbooks of legislators.
So they're going to win over Elon Musk's pocketbook? I'd like to see that happen.
Yeah, that isn't going to happen. Yeah. But he certainly knows how these things are working.
People like Musk in particular, is not averse to being completely contradictory. In America, he supports expanding the H-1 program for visas, bringing in talented engineers, well-educated engineers, basically from India. In Germany, he spends money supporting the Nazi party there, the AfD, which is against all immigration, period. End of story. Same guy, same money, same policy? No, completely opposite policies. Different country, but really the same policy. Support the manifestation of the most right-wing, most fascistic local group. And he himself is a product of apartheid South Africa.
Right. And you get those others in the mix. Kara Swisher has and Professor Brooke Harrington have talked about these techno guys. The Peter Thiels and the Steve Bannons are the ones that are at the forefront of these movements. I mean, Steve Bannon's on the air every day.
But there's a split between Bannon on the one hand and Peter Thiel and Mark Andreessen on the other hand, and we don't have time to get into that today because we're at the end of our time, but let's talk about this next time because there's really a fundamental split in the Trump coalition. We can't rely on it, but we should know about it.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. Trump's inaugural address, the tone he sets. If you remember the last time, George W. Bush turned.
And now, Forward with Falk. Join Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen as they navigate their way through the political thicket.
I don't know whether it was to Obama or to Clinton and said, boy, that was some strange, you know what.
Yeah.
I think we're going to be in for more of that strangeness.
Meanwhile, they're talking about on Tuesday the beginning of mass raids in Chicago. Against immigrants, Tuesday, Chicago. And they're looking to get volunteer ICE agents from all over the country to volunteer to step forward and come to Chicago to help them on a week-long series of raids from Tuesday to the next Monday. And that is when they plan to begin. So,
Well, one thing we'll know, whether it's ICE or icy in Chicago, it's going to be icy in Chicago next week. So we'll see how far they get.
We'll see you next week.
You've been listening to Forward with Falk. Longtime Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen discuss politics. Join them again next week, same time, same place.